as far as the flow of the chapter is concerned, we discussed how this chapter is essentially talking about the relationship of everyone with Krishna. So first it gave us knowledge about Krishna. Then it talked about surrender to Krishna, why it is required to come out of illusion. And now it will describe how some people don't surrender to Krishna, some people surrender to him. So let us look at these verses. Namam duskritino mudha.
Namam duskritino mudha.
Prapadyante naradhamaha.
Prapadyante naradhamaha.
Maya paritajnana.
Maya paritajnana.
Asuram bhavam ashritaha.
Asuram bhavam ashritaha.
So, as some of you finding the AC uncomfortable, I don't hear the noise now. You can open. What would you prefer? You are feeling comfortable. So, Nama Dushkritino Mudha. Krishna is telling over here. In the previous verse, he said that if you surrender, those who surrender to me can go beyond Maya. So then, naturally, Arjuna gets the question, why is it that some people don't surrender? In fact, not some, a large number of people don't surrender. So Krishna, in response, describes the mentalities that prevent people from surrendering. So, one way, there are four kinds of people, but it's not that people are permanently of certain kinds. People are changeable. So, these are four kinds of mentalities which prevent people from surrendering. And the whole process of spiritual life is bringing about education and a transformation by which those who don't want to surrender may also become ready to surrender. So now, this is one of the purports where practically every acharya's commentary is almost entirely different from every other acharya's commentary. The reason for that is that in general, refuting the current standard of avidya, the current version of avidya, is the tradition of the acharyas. So that means in the society that the acharyas are living in, whichever are the prominent mentalities that are preventing people from surrendering to Krishna, they will be expressed. And the acharya says, okay, this is the mentality, this is the mentality, this is the mentality. So Srila Prabhupada gives a very contemporary understanding of this purport, and he explains these four kinds of mentalities. So what are the four categories over here? So they are, so Dushkritina is a common word. It is not a category over here. So Dushkritina is something which applies to all four. And Krishna, Prabhupada explains the purport. Kriti means one who can do excellent things. Understand? But Dushkriti means one whose energy is misdirected. Dushkritina. And among these Dushkritina, so Namam Dushkritino Prapadyante. So it's like that. If you look at it from a meaning syntactic point of view, that the Dushkriti do not surrender to me, and these Dushkriti who do not surrender to me are four types: Mudha, Naradhama, Maya Apritagyana, and Asuram Bhavamashrita. So Srila Prabhupada's purport is also divided into four parts where he is describing each of these categories of people. The word Mudha comes quite frequently in the Bhagavad Gita. Which are famous verses, you remember, where Mudha comes? Yes, Abhijananti Mam Mudha, that's 9.11, very important verse. Then Krishna says, Mudha Nanu Pashyanti, Pashyanti Anu Chakshusha, it's in 15.11. And so in this chapter only he will say again, Aham Prakash Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavata, Mudhoyam Navijana, 7.25 is given. Mudhoyam Navijana. So the word Mudha comes quite frequently. And then in contrast, Asam Mudho, that will also come. In 15.5, Krishna says that one who surrender to me, they become Asam Mudha. Nirmana Moha Jitasanga Dosha Adhyat Nitya Vinitta Kama Tandvair Vimukta Sukutukka Sange Gachanti Amudha Sapadama Uvayam Amudha. So one who is free from delusion. Similarly, at the end of the 15th chapter, it is Yoma Meva Asammudho Janati Purushottama. One who is Asammudho, he is not at all bewildered. Such a person understands me to be the absolute truth. That's 15.19. So, the word Mudha and its variants come several times in the Bhagavad Gita. So now, literally speaking, the word Mudha means an ass. So Srila Prabhupada explains the word Mudha means people who have an ass-like mentality. What is their ass-like mentality? That they are constantly interested only in hard work and only in material flickering results that they get by that hard work. Srila Prabhupada is quite sarcastically eloquent in his purport over here. So here he describes the first. So the ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes, but this braying sound only disturbs others. So he says, then he says how such a person, they work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties. And they say they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. So what is this burden of self-created duties? See, there are obligatory duties and there are self-created duties. Obligatory duties means I have a family, so I have to maintain my family. And I have to take care of my family obligations and responsibilities. But self-created duty means, say, my neighbor has this big house, I have to get a bigger house in that. And especially when in the household life, envy becomes a very strong spur for trying to improve oneself. So, my neighbor has got this car, I must get this car. My relative has got this car, this particular TV, I have to get this TV. My relative has got a 3-story 3 BHK house, I have to get a 4 BHK house. So that completely propels a person very much. So they ask, and our Prabhupada explains that these mudhas, they often don't understand that ultimately, even from a material point of view, the material pleasure is limited. So how much can we eat? How much can we sleep? Ultimately, we need a small bed, a basic size of bed to sleep on. We have some basic quantity of food to eat. So this whole idea of trying to have a status in society. So because of trying to have a status in society, so people have self-created duties. That means, you know, if I am a manager in my company, then a manager means I should have this kind of car. If I am a general manager, then I must have this kind of car. And if I am at this, so I should be staying in this kind of houses. I should be staying in this kind of, wearing this kind of dress. So as a person grows up, say, in the corporate ladder, he may earn more, but the peer expectation and the peer pressure forces him to spend more. And that's why the person never has enough. No matter how much he has, always self-created duties. I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this. So self-created means these are not what are necessary for our bodily maintenance. They are certainly not necessary for our spiritual advancement. But they are created largely by the pressure from family members, from relatives, from peers, from our social circle. And that's why Narada Muni is advising Yudhishthira Maharaj in the 7th canto about how a householder should live. So he says that a householder will always get suggestions from everywhere how to improve the household life. Oh, you should get this kind of house, you get this kind of car. So Yudhishthira Maharaj says that, but Narada says, you should just not at them and neglect them. So he says, nod and neglect. Because if you don't nod, you'll get angry and force all the more. And if you nod and then don't neglect, then you'll get entangled. So just nod and neglect. So these are self-created duties. And these sap the energy of people. So nowadays when there are these there are jobs in software, and so jobs in call centers, they actually sap the body, sap the mind. There are all kind of unearthly hours people are working, and somehow when devotees are working in such environments, it's very unnatural for them. But when everybody is working that way, what happens is one is forced to work that way. And so sometimes, not only our health, not only our mind, even our spirituality gets very damaged by such things. So as devotees, when we are sharing Krishna consciousness with others, generally we have to tell people that certain material lifestyles are not congenial for spiritual life. And if they are at all necessary, we said, because financial situations, they should only be for expedient temporary purposes. You know, such as certain material, careers. So in general, if a career is involving breaking of the four eight principles, that should be given up immediately. But if it is not involving that, but it is involving very excessive work hours, or unnatural work hours, then that is also not conducive for spiritual life. And especially if one is planning to be in the Grihastha Ashram, then it is important to plan this way. So, Imam Dushkritino Mudha Prapadyante Naradama. Then, so, actually, we can read what Prabhupada says over there. Naradhama is, so, Nara Adhama, the lowest among mankind. So, this is an interesting description. Prabhupada says these people are just not interested in spiritual life. It's not that they are busy, it's just that they are so lazy spiritually. And no, I have no interest in this. So, actually, a spiritual life is not a matter of interest, it is a matter of necessity. Just like we discussed earlier, a patient says that treatment may interest me. You know, the treatment is not a matter of interest, the treatment is a matter of necessity. And if a person doesn't take the treatment, if somebody says treatment is not compulsory, fine, but suffering is compulsory. So one continues on the cycle of birth and death because of that. So this is the specific purpose. Srila Prabhupada talks about how the child in the womb is suffering and he prays to God. And that's how they... So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also talks about it. He says... Which is that song? Bhulya Tomar. So he says that actually how I prayed to you, my dear Lord, when I was in the womb, but when I came out, I forgot you. So actually in that song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Vanchi Lohar, you gave me up. But actually it's not that the Lord gives us up. It is that how it works is when we are in the womb, then we in despair pray to the Lord. And the Lord responds to our prayer, the Lord appears before us, and then the Lord gives us his vision, and then the natural course has to move forward. But when we are born, then what happens? Adarera chele, swajanera kole, hasya katanu kala. He says, samsara lagilo bhala. He says, I became very happy and started enjoying life. So, I had asked Radhama this question, that if we pray to Krishna, and the soul's prayers in the third canto are very touching, say, I don't even want to be born in this world. Let me stay in this situation also because I will remember you at that time. So I had asked Maharaj, is it that Krishna doesn't respond to our prayers? If the soul is praying over there, my dear Lord, I don't want to forget you. If I go into the world, I will forget you again. So then why does Krishna send us into the world and he lets us forget us? So Maharaj replied, Krishna responds to the prayer, then he comes over there. But then, after that is a prayer that is offered under the pressure of misery. So that surrender is immature. That surrender is not voluntary. So even in life, why to speak in the womb, even now, sometimes when we have terrible bodily diseases, Krishna, just release me from this. I will never again do any sinful activity. But then that is fine. Anyway, we call out to Krishna. But then again, the misery goes away. So it is good if we surrender to Krishna when there is suffering. But the test is, when there is no suffering, what do we do? So actually, in one sense, suffering tests our devotion, but enjoyment tests our devotion greater. Because in general, if a person is pious at the time of suffering, the person is not going to become atheistic. If the person has some basic faith in God, so he will take shelter of Krishna. But when enjoyment comes, then the person gets tempted, the person gets distracted. So that is the great test. So when the opportunity comes, so therefore, even when we are healthy, even when we are like now all of us are trying to surrender to Krishna when we are young. So that is credible. Certainly when people become old, at least at that time when they surrender to Krishna and focus their life on Krishna, that is good. People don't even do that. So, but if somebody can do that before when they are young, and that means there is the opportunity to enjoy and one gives up the enjoyment for Krishna's sake, that is actually the test of devotion. So the material value is so antithetical to the devotional value. I wrote an article in Back to God, 10 reasons why we should surrender in youth to Krishna consciousness. So one of the reasons basically is that it's an entirely anti-devotional attitude. That means when I become good for nothing, then I become good for Krishna. When I become good for nothing materially, no, I can't have a job and earn money. I can't take care of my grandchildren at home. I can't offer any help to my son or daughter. Then they say, now you can go to the temple. So that is not at all devotional. So actually the soul has to surrender voluntarily. Now, this is Naradhama means the person becomes complacent by material situations and feels that I don't need God, I'm happy here. People say God is happy there, I'm happy here. Let it stay as it is. But it's not going to stay as it is. Because our happiness is going to change to misery. It just takes one moment. You know, our situation in this world, we are suspended between the unknowable and the unavoidable. We are what? Suspended between the unknowable and the unavoidable. And what is going to happen tomorrow? What is going to happen day after tomorrow? We don't know. So that is unknowable. Our immediate future to us is largely unknowable. And whatever we can look through in the looking glass of future, what we can see, we don't want to see. What are we going to see? Mrityu jara vyadhi. So that is there that we don't want to see. So actually speaking, we are suspended between the what? Unknowable and the unavoidable. So there is no room, if a person is sober, there is no room for complacency for such a person. And understand that actually there is no question of not having interest in God, because it's essential for me. Okay. So let's move on. I just plan writing this down. So I'm not going to write all the reasons, but just one or two reasons over here. So somebody says, this is a very common interest. I don't have any interest in spirituality. So what are the reasons I mentioned briefly over here? One is, for patient, treatment is not a matter of interest. Of necessity. Then to offer oneself to Krishna and become good for nothing is a very non-devotional attitude. And lastly, we are suspended between the unknowable and the unavoidable. So we are in a very precarious situation. And because we are in such a precarious situation, actually, to say that I am not interested in spirituality is the height of ignorance. So this is Naradhama. Then after that is Maya Aparita Jnana.
So Mayaya Aparita Jnana means that these people have Jnana, but their Jnana is destroyed by Maya. So if they have Jnana, how can Jnana be destroyed by Maya? Actually, the essence of Jnana, the purpose of Jnana, that is destroyed by Maya. So Maya Aparita Jnana. Let's look at this quickly. So you remember Prabhupada elaborates on this Maya Aparita Jnana in Ishopanishad. He talks about Annam Tamah Pravishanti Ye Avidya Upasati. Sorry?
In that parable, all four are
not. No, not all four. Because Prabhupada is basically talking about those who have. Why that purpose of talking about how those who are in knowledge enter into a deeper hell? Avedha Vadrataha and Maya Aparita Jnana. So Prabhupada classifies are deluded. Have knowledge but are deluded about the essence and purpose of knowledge. So knowledge in terms of they have knowledge of factual figures. So there are many atheistic scientists who have phenomenal knowledge. So in general, when Prabhupada criticizes scientists, it's not a critique of science that we are having. It's a criticism of materialism. So to a large extent, in the scientific establishment, as well as in the popular culture, science has been equated with materialism. But it doesn't have to be like that. It's not that science is inherently materialistic. But materialism has appropriated science to promote its own ideology. So, and from materialism to atheism is just one step. Because materialism, what does it mean? That means, materialism means that there is only matter that exists and nothing apart from that matter. So if nothing from matter apart from matter exists, that obviously means that there is no God. So, our criticism, we can alienate a lot of people if we seem to them as anti-scientific. And we are not anti-scientific. So, materialists are how? They are devotees of matter. They are devotees of matter. And some materialists say that, okay, even if there is some mind, there is some consciousness, that just comes from matter only. There is nothing beyond that. And some other materialists say there is no mind on it. Only matter. So, these materialists are not just devotees of matter, they are fanatical devotees of matter. So they are materialistic fanatics. So materialism appropriating science to promote its own ideology. That means that there are materialistic people who feel that yes, by science we can show that there is no God, or we can portray that there is no God and no soul. Science greatest success have been in the material world, and because of that, science has produced AC, science has produced internet, laptops. So people think that science is able to understand the material world. To some extent it is true. But it is not. See, whether the material realm is the only reality, that is not a scientific question. That is a philosophical question. Whether something exists beyond matter or not, that is not a scientific question. Because science is basically a method which involves observation, hypothesis, experiment, and then conclusion. So now, this will take place within a certain framework. Now, science itself, for example, is proposing the existence of a God particle. It's not observable. It's not observable by even the most high-tech microscopes. All that can be observed is its effects with the most sophisticated particle accelerators. So therefore, the point which I'm making over here is that science in and of itself is a tool for acquiring knowledge, and it gives a certain kind of knowledge, but
I'll write this down and I'll explain it.
So whether anything exists beyond matter or not, that is a philosophical question. Because science will basically observe, hypothesize, experiment and conclude. So now, if there is, whether there is something which is beyond our observation or not, science has no jurisdiction for saying that. So that's why materialism is a philosophy. Science is more or less a tool for acquiring knowledge. People say the scientific method. So now, of course, knowledge that is acquired by the scientific method can be called science. It is called science. But science in itself is not philosophy. Now, basically, what is the difference between science and philosophy? Science is basically a knowledge that is acquired using the method of science. And the method of science doesn't claim any way to reveal to us any absolute truths. This is what we observed, this is what we hypothesized, this is what we found out. So, actually speaking, whether anything exists beyond matter or not, for that science cannot say anything. For that we need philosophy. So what has happened is, science, if you remember earlier, I discussed science is like a map. Remember I discussed this earlier? A map. A map gives us a partial description of the territory. As far as that goes, it is fine. Now, the map in and of itself cannot tell me whether on the territory something beyond the map is there or not. And if it is there, what is that something beyond? The map cannot tell me. So materialism, in one sense, assumes that, actually speaking, that there is nothing beyond matter. Now, science is a map. Because it involves observation and inference, it primarily studies matter. But that doesn't mean that it is a scientific tenet that there is nothing beyond matter. It is just something which is beyond the reach of the scientific map to depict. That's all. So, there are many people who are Maya Aprita Jnana. Now, there are many people who are atheistic in their thought process. But they are not ready to accept the conclusions that atheism leads to. What is, for example, Darwin in 1859 said, survival of the fittest. There is struggle among all the species and there is survival of the fittest. So then, maybe 80 years later, there was a person named Adolf Hitler who wrote a book called Mein Kampf. This is my struggle. And he, along with many intellectuals and scientists and researchers, they all came up with the idea of called eugenics. So eugenics was basically, it was called social Darwinism. So Darwin had said that there is struggle between the species. So he saw Hitler and German saw that there is a struggle between the races. And they said just as in nature, the unfit species die out, so even in the world, the unfit races will die out. And what nature is going to do, we will help nature on the way. So we Germans are the fit species and Jews are the unfit species. So let us help nature on the way. So actually speaking, it's undeniable that there are, in the writings of Hitler, as well as in the ideology that he promoted, there was a clear idea that so many people who were killed, it was based on the idea that our species is the fittest species, our race is the fittest, and that is what should survive. So they killed so many people because of that. And after there were these gas chambers in which people were killed. But a lot of people were killed in hospitals. Now, first what they did when the 1930 onwards Hitler started getting power. So first thing he said is that all those parents who are less intelligent, we should make them forcibly sterile. Because we want only intelligent people in our population. So all those who are less intelligent, make them sterile. And similarly, then he found, okay, all those people who are not physically strong, their progeny will also not be physically strong. So make them also sterile. Then after that he said, all those people who are blind, who are lame, who are deaf, you know, actually, because their genes are faulty, so they are like that. And whoever they begin, they will also be like that. So kill them also. So actually it was a systematic attempt. And it was horrible. So afterwards, of course, scientists abandoned that. So now when atheists are asked, you know, would you like to live in a society that is run by Darwinian principles? Say, no, such a society will be fascistic. And then, why do you promote Darwinian evolution? Why do you believe in evolution? They say, yes, evolution applies to all species except humans. So, it's very self-serving. They say that actually, the genes are pushing everyone, but we humans don't have to be pushed by the genes. So, it's a very strange idea. So, they're ready to propagate the idea, but they're not ready to accept the consequences. So, you know, the biggest experiment with atheism that happened in the world history was in China and Russia. Both these countries officially adopted communism, and communism was officially atheistic. So, now what happened behind the Iron Curtain? These two countries are said to be behind the Iron Curtain. They had Iron Curtain, that means the cloth curtain, I can pull it. The Iron Curtain, it can't be pulled. So, what happened in these countries is not known only. So, according to several researchers, in those two countries, the number of people who were killed were 7 times the number of people who were killed in the Second World War. Huge it was. And what was the idea? Their idea was that, and most of the people who were killed were religious people. Because they're somehow, they had the idea that, you know, humans, by the process of evolution, for those people who were weak, they had the idea that they needed God as a mental crutch. But now we don't need God as a mental crutch. And those people who need God as a mental crutch, they are unfit. And either they should become fit and give up the crutch, or we will finish them off. So the most systematic persecution of religion happened in that time. And what was the result? It was the greatest human massacre under government sponsorship. And as soon as that stopped, without much effort, religion exploded over there. So the point here is that there are many people who embrace materialism and atheism, but they are not ready to accept its consequences. So maya aparita jnana means they have jnana, but they don't see what is the consequence of the kind of jnana that they are having. And that is why... So they are not able to... They are eager. They are eager to push forward their theories, but unwilling to accept its natural consequences. So if I don't believe in God, if I don't believe in an immortal soul, if I don't believe in divine providence, then all that happens is that all of us are lumps of chemicals. And if some lump of chemical tastes good, then cut it and eat it. If some other lump of chemical comes in the way of my enjoying, just, you know, put a syringe in it and kill it. So, what is left for that? So there's some journal of physics, I quoted this in my Sunday piece also, journal of America, so they said that if a woman wants to kill a child, they don't use the word kill obviously, wants to avoid pregnancy after she has delivered, she should be allowed to do that. That means after the child is born, she should be killed. They're allowed to kill. Now when this article was published, it created a furor. But then these scientists, now it's not the mainstream scientific opinion, but what they said is, actually speaking from a scientific point of view, there is no difference between the child in the womb and outside the womb. In the same unit, when he's grown a little bigger, that's all. So if we can kill him inside the womb, what's wrong in killing him outside the womb? So actually speaking, there is no sense of values within science. So Maya Aparita Jnana. And then lastly is Asuram Bhava Ashrita. Maya Aparita Jnana means these people may not be explicitly atheistic. They are materialistic. They don't understand what is the consequences. But Asuram Bhava Ashrita means they are explicitly atheistic. They are demoniac. And such people are the people who try to kill God. They try to destroy people's faith in God, people's faith in spirituality. And they do it in various ways. So, Krishna is saying these kind of people can never surrender to me. Now again, these are not discrete categories. That means, one person may have several of these also. One person may be Mudha and he may be Asuram Bhava Mashita also. He may be very materialistic and engaged in material pleasures only. And he may be demoniac also. But these are broad mentalities which obstruct people from surrendering to Krishna. So some of us, we may say, we may also have some of these. So we may just, some of us may be infatuated with material knowledge, some of us may be material pleasure, or which may have some lingering envy towards Krishna. Most people, even after becoming devotees, we may be more interested in our bodily comforts and bodily care than in making serious spiritual advancement. So these are all within our devotional life. We can find that, so Mudha would be what? You know, we are too interested in material pleasures only, nothing more than that. So, and Asuram Bhava Ashrita, we still have envy of Krishna. So, all these are possible in our own way. And then, let's move forward to the next verse. Chaturvidha bhajante maam.
Chaturvidha bhajante maam.
Jana sukritina arjuna.
Jana sukritina arjuna.
Ato jigyasurarthaarthi.
Ato jigyasurarthaarthi.
Jnani cha bharatarshabha.
Jnani cha bharatarshabha.
So chaturvidha, these four kind of people surrender to bhajan. So it's interesting, Krishna is not using the word prapadyante. He says bhajante. Because prapadyante is very high. Previous verse says these four people don't surrender to me. But he says these four people start worshipping me. From worship to surrender is a slow progression. That will take a long time. These people start worshipping. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. They are sukritina. They have kriti, but they are using the kriti in right directions. And what are those categories? Artho jikyasur artharthi jnani. So in the NOD, the example for each of these is given. It's quite well known. So I'll not tell this. You tell which are the examples for all these four categories of people from scriptures. Artho is Gajendra. Good. Artharthi is Dhruv Maharaj. Okay. Let's go first to Jigyasu and then come to. Artho Jigyasu Artharthi. Artha Arthi, that means one who needs money. Artho is distress, one who is in distress. So Arthi. Arthi means when we worship the Lord, we become free from distress. When we offer our heart to Krishna, then heart becomes free from distress. So Arthi is also a variant of Ratri. A Ratri. So just as we illuminate the torch, at that time what happens? The light, from it is like pushing the torch in our own heart. We use the torch to illuminate the Lord. Actually, the Lord is self-luminous, but we are not able to see Him. So, similarly, within our heart, we will see Him. So, there is distress, then he is a seeker of mind. This is Dhruva Maharaj. Then Jigyasu is Kumaras. They are Jnanis. Shaunakadi Rishis. So they are asking questions. Shaunakadi himself are evolved, but there are other sages who are also there for hearing. So there are Jnanas. We want to know what is it all about. Now, in Bhaktisambhava Sindhu, Parikshit Maharaj is classed as a perfected devotee almost. So he is giving as an example not of Jigyasu, but of, he is an example of Shravanam. So in the assembly at Naimisharanya, not all of them were realized. So there are different levels of transcendentalist. That's why some of them were inquisitive. So now we can see these four as motives by which people come to Krishna. Now among these, Krishna will explain the best is the Jnani. But we can see that these four also have become spurs for us to make our Krishna consciousness more serious. You can switch on the fan now. So these can become spurs for us to become more serious in our Krishna consciousness. Sometimes when there is some suffering, some misery at that time, within our devotional time also we take shelter of Krishna more. Sometimes when I had to give a class, then I become jigyasu. What is all this about? Let me study. And then sometimes within our service, when we need to do something, and we become artharthi. You know, like Prabhupada told you, some desire, you know, you go and raise this money and then only come back to them. How do you do that? You know, how Prabhupada started life membership? Well, he was told, Hare Krishna Prabhu, just go and get, tell people, who will give money like this? Just go. And he went and they would get money. So, artharthi. For Krishna, we are artharthi not for our sake, we are for Krishna's sake. And Jnani is actually when we understand, when we get spiritual knowledge, then that inspires us to deepen our study of Krishna conscious philosophy so that we can surrender more to Krishna also. So then, Krishna will describe how these people progress forward. Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta.
Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta.
Eka bhaktir vishishyate.
Eka bhaktir vishishyate.
Priyo hi jnanino atyartham.
Priyo hi jnanino atyartham.
Aham sacha mama priyah.
Aham sacha mama priyah.
So, Tesha, among those people, jnani is the best. What kind of jnani? Nitya yukta eka bhakti. Two characters Krishna has given, which indicate that he is not just ordinary jnani. So the word yukta means engaged, connected. So he is connected with me. Mayasattamanha pata yogam yunjan madashaya. Yunjan. Yunjan is also related with yukta, same root. So he is always engaged, always connected, and he is single-mindedly devoted. So he is a very special kind of jnani. That means by his jnana, he has come to the come to connect with at the level of devotion. Eka bhakti vishishyate. So he is special, he is vishesh among them. And he is very dear to me. Priyohi jnana atyartham. He is very dear to me and I am very dear to him. So, this is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is expressing his affection directly. Aham sache mama priyaha. He will express it again in the future, but slowly we see the bhakti element in Bhagavad Gita is increasing more and more. Now, we'll discuss all these three verses together. Udara sarve vaite.
Udara sarve vaite.
Yanitvatma iva me matam.
Yanitvatma iva me matam.
Asthitah sahi yuktatma.
Asthitah sahi yuktatma.
Mamevanuttamam gatim.
Mamevanuttamam gatim.
So, udara sarva evaite. They are all udar. So, Prabhupada translates udara as they are magnanimous. So, Ramacharya explains what does this magnanimous mean? He says that Bhagawan is so bhavagrahi, he is so hungry for devotion that even if somebody offers a mixed devotion, that mixed devotion also satisfies at least to some extent the hunger of the Lord. And that's why the Lord feels so grateful. So grateful, oh, you have worshipped me, I should reciprocate. You are so generous that you are worshipping me. So actually speaking, Krishna is hungry. You know, in Bhakti Samrit Sindhu, when the 64 qualities of Krishna are being described, at that time one quality is gratitude. And what is the example Rupa Goswami used for this gratitude? He says that Krishna tells the Mahabharata or one of the Puranas, and he says, when Draupadi was in distress, she called out to me fervently. And because she called out to me so fervently, I have become indebted to her. And that debt is increasing more and more and more. That means, you know, when a soul calls out to Krishna, Krishna feels grateful that a soul is reposing his trust in me. And Krishna feels grateful for that. He feels indebted by that. So he says, similarly, oh, you are in distress, you are coming to me, you are so udar, you are so generous. Dara sarva evaite. And Krishna says, they are all good, but again he is coming to the point. Jnanitva atma eva me matam. Among this, jnani is atma eva, just like me. Asthita hasa yukta atma. He is well situated because he has understood that I am the ultimate goal and he is going to achieve this ultimate goal. So now, after describing these, he has glorified the Jnani so much. And Arjuna gets a question. Yes, this Jnani is going to come to you. What about these other three categories of people? How will they come to you? Will they come to you eventually? Will they surrender to you? Will they go beyond Maya? He says, yes, that will happen, but after many lifetimes. बहुनाम जन्मनामंते
बहुनाम जन्मनामंते
ज्ञानवान माम प्रपद्यते
ज्ञानवान माम प्रपद्यते
वासुदेव सर्वमिति
वासुदेव सर्वमिति
समात्मा सुदुर्लभा
समात्मा सुदुर्लभा
सो बहुनाम जन्मनामंते आफ्टर मेनी लाइफ टाइम्स ए पर्सन प्रैक्टिसिंग मिक्स्ड डिवोशनल सर्विस विल कम टू द लेवल ऑफ प्योर डिवोशनल सर्विस ज्ञानवान माम When he becomes Jnani, he will understand that actually I should not approach God for anything else except God. I approach Krishna to gain Krishna. That's all. So, when the devotee comes to that level, then he will surrender to Sarvamiti. Everything that I get from everywhere else, I'll get all that and more from Krishna. Which a person who comes to this realization is Sudurlabha, extremely rare. So now here Krishna has described how people surrender to him gradually. So 15th was described those who surrendered to him. Then 16, 17, 18, 19 described those who surrender. Sorry, 15 described those who don't surrender. 16, 17, 16, 19 described those who surrender and how they grow forwards. Now, from 20th, Krishna described those who surrender but to something else. Some principle, some other person other than him. So we have discussed these verses in our Ishopanishad course, so I'll go quickly over them. कामैस्तैस्तैरितज्ञानः प्रपद्यन्ते अन्यदेवता तं तं यममास्थाय प्रकृत्यान्यतस्वया सो कामैस्तैस्तैरितज्ञानः सो व्हाट इज द डिफरेंस बिटवीन दिस कैटेगरी एंड द अर्लियर कैटेगरी They also had material desire. They also were artharthi or artho. But for these people, their material desires are so strong that their knowledge is strong. That means their material desires have become so much control, they have taken so much control over them that they can't conceive of worshiping the Supreme Lord. They go to some other demigods because of that. Of course, their material desires are not, material desires are not totally destroyed their intelligence. They are totally destroyed. Then they would just become material, grossly, sinfully materialistic. These people are not because sinfully materialistic, but they are going to some other devtas. Ritajnaha. So that means this is actually a very strong, strong, at one level, condemnation of demigod worship. They are saying that those who worship the demigods are Ritajnaha. So the absolute point of view, although Krishna is saying this is not beneficial. Prapadyante anyadevataha. They surrender to other gods. So, you know, Prabhupada, in one purport in the fourth canto, in the Puranjan pastime, he says, actually, all kinds of services, apart from service to Krishna, is futile. Whether it be national service, social service, cultural service, automobile service, dog service, cat service. Now, he says, social service is noble. Dog service, automobile service, that is so mundane, so materialistic. But from the absolute perspective, now everything is a distraction from Krishna. Even social service can be a distraction from Krishna. So Prabhupada is giving us from that perspective. Similarly, from the absolute perspective, those who don't surrender to Krishna, those who, as compared to those who are Jnanavan, those who don't understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, they are Nitajnana. And they go to other devatas, and according to their own natures, they try to worship them. Tantanyamastaya, Prakritya Niyatahasvaya. Then what happens?
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktaha.
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktaha.
Shraddhayar chitum icchati.
Shraddhayar chitum icchati.
Tasya tasya chanam shraddha.
Tasya tasya chanam shraddha.
Tameva vidadhamyaham.
Tameva vidadhamyaham.
So, tanum refers to form. So, whatever form they desire to worship. Shraddhayar chitum icchati. With faith they desire only. Tandam tasya tasya chanam shraddham. I give faith to them in that form. And tam eva vidham, I give that faith. And why does Krishna give that faith? Because at least they are coming within the house of religion. You remember I gave the example of a prince who has gone away from his father. So then, he's not ready to come back to his father. The father sends a minister. And the minister shows, I have so much wealth and I will pay you this much, come back to me. So how is he having that wealth and is able to do that wealth? It's because of his father only. But that's what enables him to come closer. So Krishna gives faith. And then what happens? Krishna not only uses faith, he gives something more also. Sataya shraddhaya yuktas.
Sataya shraddhaya yuktas.
Tasya radhanam ihate.
Tasya radhanam ihate.
Labhate chittah kaman.
Labhate chittah kaman.
Mayaiva bhitan hitan.
Mayaiva bhitan hitan.
So, when people worship him with the shraddha, that particular deva, tasya aradhanite, labhate, they get the results. But how do they get the results? By me only. So now at this stage, somebody will say, okay, fine. So this whole system is arranged by you only. You are only giving faith. You are only giving fruits. Then what's wrong with it? That Krishna will describe in the next verse where he concludes his discussion of the God worship. Antavattu phalam tesham.
Antavattu phalam tesham.
Tadbhavatyalpa
medhasam. Tadbhavatyalpa medhasam.
Devan devayajo yanti.
Devan devayajo yanti.
Madbhakta yanti mamapi.
Madbhakta yanti mamapi.
So Krishna is saying that these are temporary fruits. Although they get fruit, they are temporary. They don't last for long. And therefore, one who seeks the temporary is alpamedhasa, is having less intelligence. He has intelligence, but very little intelligence. Alpa. So now, Krishna had used another variant of the word alpa in a positive sense earlier. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. So even little spiritual advancement will stay with us internally. But here, alpa, very little intelligence. I don't understand what is actually of eternal gain. You know, a wise person should not settle for anything less than the best. A wise person should not settle. So, they are going to be because they settle for that same kind of worship, that same kind of effort directed, if they are directed towards Krishna, they could have got eternal result. But they are directed to temporary. Now, Prabhupada explained the purport, what all is temporary. He says, the demigods' blessings, their planets, their worshippers, and demigods themselves, all are temporary. And because of this, focusing on this kind of worship is a sign of less intelligence. So somebody has to do worship. Imagine that there are two colleges and I'll get an engineering degree from both colleges. And both have to more or less similar effort is there. I have to go study, I have to pass the exam, I have to follow the rules. But one college is going to give the degree which is going to be valid only for 5 years. Another college is going to give a degree that is valid lifelong. If somebody settles for a 5-year degree, then he is Alpamedasa. So, Alpamedasa means what? One settles for something less than the best, something eternal or something temporary. So now we may not have any experience of a college that gives degree that is only valid for a few years. But there are courses, especially if somebody goes in the field of software, somebody learns a course and then that field itself becomes obsolete after some time. Somebody studied some languages which were used earlier, after some years when the person goes in the job, actually it's like a, you know, it's a country that is speaking a different language only. What the language that we knew earlier is not of much use. So, yeah, there is this whole field where a person gets caught up in just working so hard for something temporary, just so fleeting. So, it's Alpamedasa. Madbhakta Yanti Mamati. But those who worship me, they come to me. Now, Krishna has already mentioned that he is transcendental. Ajopasana Vyatma. He is eternal. Attaparataram Nanya. So, in this way, now Krishna has compared demigod worshippers with his devotees and has shown how surrender to him is better. And next verse, which we will discuss tomorrow, we will talk about impersonalists, but and he will show how actually worshipping him is far better than worshipping the impersonal Brahman. So, any questions quickly? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki Jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki Jai.